Swift Talk Radio.
Okay, so I go over to the downtown location of Milwaukee, where Bucket Works is, in order to do this podcast for all of you out there. And here's what happens. I'm driving around. I'm looking for a parking spot. I'm looking for a parking spot. I'm looking for a parking spot. Now, this is Sunday. Downtown near Grand Avenue, it is normally dead. I mean dead. It is ghost town, cathedral on Monday, dead. And it's just, where did all these cars come from? Where did all these people come from? What in the hell are they doing when there's only 1 hour left to shop downtown, assuming that anybody is bothering to shop? What is going on here? Why can I not find a parking space? And I mention by text to everybody back at Bucket Works, I said, look, I can't find a parking spot. I'm just going to do the podcast from home, which is what I'm doing today. And they are, you know, some people kind of, you know, I got a couple of responses that kind of said, ha ha ha, why didn't you just park in the parking structure? Well, because the parking structure is like, you know, $18. Screw that. Why do I have to pay for parking to go into a store that nobody's really, well, apparently somebody's doing something downtown. I don't know. Maybe there's something going on at the Riverside, or maybe the Edelweiss is running or something. A lot of people around, a lot of people exercising, a lot of people doing things, or maybe they're just parking there because they can't find a place to park in order to go to the lakefront. I don't know. For whatever reason, I could not find a parking spot, and so I'm doing this podcast from home today, this time. So, anyway, that's all I've got for you at the moment. Let's start the Sacred Cow Verst House. Alright, well, greetings to all you fine ladies, extraordinary gentlemen, gifted youngsters, and exceptionally talented household pets. This is the Swift Radio Hour, a.k.a. the Sacred Cow Verst House, for Sunday, May 17th, 2015. I'm your host, Eric J. Hildeman, and here you'll be challenged by logic and critical thinking as you learn to appreciate the immense value of cold, hard truths instead of comfy illusions. We are the official radio show and podcast of SWIFT, which stands for the Southeast Wisconsin Freethinkers, the oldest and largest group of atheists and agnostics in the greater Milwaukee area. Be sure to check out our website at www.swiftnow.org. This podcast is being recorded live from the genealogical database offices of the Priory of Sion, located in Paris, France. Actually, it's being recorded live from Greenfield, Wisconsin. Yes, pre-recorded live in Greenfield, Wisconsin, where people have stopped putting out their sprinklers because it started to rain. Yes, I put my sprinkler outside to water the grass because I just planted grass, and no sooner did I start the thing than clouds came in from out of nowhere and it's going to start thunderstorming. And yeah, why did I bother doing all of that if I had known it was going to rain anyway? Yeah, I know, the forecast. Since when is the forecast right? You can listen to this podcast at sacredcowversthouse.podomatic.com. There you will find every episode of this podcast permanently available, where you can access the podcast RSS feed, subscribe via iTunes, or download the Podomatic app. We will always have a new episode available for you every Sunday at 4 p.m., unless I can't find a parking spot and have to come all the way back home. Quick disclaimer, opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of the Southeast Wisconsin Freethinkers, its members, or its affiliate organizations. So, for example, if I say that Carly Fiorina is only running for president in order to sell another damned book, that is not an official position of the group. SWIFT is an organization which is open to all political affiliations, ethnicities, and viewpoints. So, I'm here, Muhammad the Teddy Bear is here, Shadow the Kitty Cat is here, and various other critters that reside in the basement of my home in Greenfield, Wisconsin, are here. Once a month is no longer enough. SWIFT is now going to meet every week in order to capitalize on the momentum that we've created and increase both membership and member involvement, so you can stop in every Sunday at Bucket Works in downtown Milwaukee and participate in maybe this podcast and sit down or socialize with your fellow freethinkers, Mythicist Milwaukee, and the Atheist Community of Milwaukee, and Atheist, what is the other one? The umbrella organization is Free Thought Alliance of Milwaukee. Everybody would be there for that. Maybe that's why I couldn't find parking. I don't know. Maybe I have to pony up for parking from now on. And speaking of weekly socializing, we're doing a weekly walk, talk, fitness together, fitness get together type of thing. It's every Friday at Greenfield Park, located north of Lincoln Avenue, between 116th and 124th. So everybody meets in the lot by the swimming pool next to the west side of the park at 9 a.m. bright and early. So if you're looking to socialize and get in shape, go check it out. The park is a beautiful place to be. And let's see, our next business meeting will be, that is our, one of our more traditional meetings, is going to be Sunday, June 7th at 11 a.m. in the heart of downtown Milwaukee at Bucket Works, which is located right above the TJ Maxx, next to the statue of John Plankinton. We're looking to take full advantage of this wonderful space we've been paying money for. It's big, it's fancy, and it's awesome. We like it. That having been said, I will not be at Bucket Works next week. Instead, I'm going to be in Madison, Wisconsin. Why? I'm going to WisCon. That's the feminist-themed science fiction conference. While there, I'm going to try and network with some other free thinkers who want to get on board with the podcast, because we have a lot of friends who live out in Madison and they don't get a chance to be on the Sacred Cow First House very often, so I'm looking forward to that. Every summer, Swift has its summer solstice get-together. We've set it this year for June 20th at Idle Isle Park in Muskego. We've had it there for the last few years, and it's always been awesome. We'll have a grill for burgers and brats. It's potluck for food and snacks. People who want to bring an alcoholic beverage, you can do so. And it's just a great time, so be sure to check that out. That's noon. I think it's noon. If it's not noon, I'll let you know. June 20th. So, what an interesting week it's been in the news, as always. The bad news story that just won't go away, Deflategate, has seen some punishment dealt out by Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL. Apparently, he thinks that the entire scheme of deflating footballs was masterminded, engineered, and carried out solely by Tom Brady, because Tom Brady received a huge fine and a 4-game suspension, whereas nobody else on the team did. The team loses a couple of key draft picks, but aside from that, no other players were directly punished. Because it makes all kinds of sense that the busiest man on the entire football team, the one who always has all the cameras pointed directly at him, would be able to find the time and the privacy in the middle of a championship playoff game to partially deflate each and every football he touches without anyone seeing him directly do it. Yeah, that makes all kinds of sense. I'm still sick and damn tired of this being a news story. I'm sick and damn tired of the news story in general. But now, at least, finally, there's some real injustice to talk about here. And it's by the guy who's supposedly in charge. Yeah. Speaking of deflated balls, Jeb Bush, now he says that given what we know now, he would not have invaded Iraq the way his brother did. Ah, what a pussy. Man, hey, kudos for recognizing the obvious, but damn it, he's a Bush! He's supposed to stick to his guns no matter how ridiculous it gets. I think it's time to resurrect an old slogan from, you know, what was used back when his father was campaigning for president. Bush is a wimp. Yeah. Okay, so Ron Jeremy, yes, porn star Ron Jeremy, is trying to get people to eat healthy and lose weight. Ron suffered from an aortic dissection that nearly killed him in 2013 and caused him to have open-heart surgery. Since then, he's gotten himself into shape a little bit, lost some weight, does daily exercises. Now he wants people to be more mindful of their health. He's especially worried about people's blood pressure because it was a lifetime of high blood pressure that nearly did him in. He wants people to get their blood pressure checked and bring their blood pressure down. Hey, Jeremy, you know what I'm going to do? I'll watch a porno DVD with you in it. Yeah, that'll lower my blood pressure right down, along with some other things. Yeah. The other Boston Marathon bomber, Jokhar Tsarnaev, has now been given the death penalty, because apparently the best way to punish a terrorist who is willing to sacrifice his life for an act of terrorism is to give him exactly what he wanted. Uh-huh. All right. Kim Jong-un, North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un has publicly executed his defense minister, Hyun Yong-cho, I think that's how you pronounce it, apparently for dozing off during a meeting with the supreme leader. Also for disagreeing with him from time to time. Oh, no. The method of execution used, Kim Jong-un shot him with an anti-aircraft gun. Yeah, really. Well, there's this dishwasher. He's making some news because he lost 100 pounds by eating on the job. I'm not going to eat at that restaurant, is all I'm saying. Why? Because I'll go to the restaurant where all the employees are gaining weight eating the food. Yeah. The publisher of Clinton Cash, the book that alleges corrupt dealings with the Clinton Foundation charity donations, yeah, has now revised the latest edition. Yes, the new printing contains at least several changes where the book was factually inaccurate. The exact revisions are available for review on the publisher's website. See, the news story here isn't that a conservative publication made factual errors. The real news story is that, for once, they actually admitted it. Well, Mitt Romney took on Evander Holyfield in a boxing match for charity. Yes, Romney defeated the former boxing champ in what was clearly a hammed-up act by Holyfield, who played along for the fun of it and went down to the canvas in the first round. The fight was managed, of course, by Don King. Men's rights activists, yes, those clowns, they're calling for a boycott of the movie Mad Max Fury Road, saying that it's a feminist trope disguised as a macho guy film. I don't even need a punchline for that one, do I? No, I'd just let it be. Ay, ay. New hit show on TLC is called, I'm not making this up, Labor Games. It's where a game show takes place inside the birthing room of a hospital. Yeah. Women undergoing labor, about to have a baby, and their significant others who happen to be in the room, they answer questions to win prizes, like a year's worth of free diapers or other baby-related things. You know what? We as a society are just so fucking bored. We really are. And finally, upcoming movie, Gem and the Holograms. Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. All right. It's time to do an Ask Eric segment. And of course, when we do an Ask Eric segment, we got our little, you know, message thing here.
Message for you, sir.
All right, there we are. Dear Eric, now that Chokhar Tsarnaev has been given the death penalty for his role in the Boston Marathon bombings, what are your feelings on capital punishment? Good question. Basically, my take on the death penalty is simply this. We've got this justice system that a lot of times it convicts the innocent, or far more frequently it lets guilty people go free. I'm not comfortable giving a system like that the power to take someone's life. I'm really not. That having been said, you know, I recognize that there are simply some crimes which are too heinous not to have the death penalty for, you know, people like bombers of public buildings or people who shoot up schools or serial killers, stuff like that. Yeah, we need to, you know, kill people of that nature or we're just not going to be able to live with ourselves as a society. So I get that. I guess I'm reluctantly, therefore, in favor of it, but only at the federal level. Certain states, Texas, that have been kill-happy for far too long have got to knock that off. And we need to have some real reforms for our legal system while we're at it. Before I'd go along with anything like a death penalty, we've got to shake things up in the legal systems. For starters, the process is all polarized and adversarial without any real strong voice from the center, whose sole interest is truth. We need one lawyer who's only interested in the truth and to help with anything else. We have a jury. It's a system with 12 people from off the street, i.e. mostly morons, and no lawyer argues on their behalf. Where's the jury's lawyer? The jury should get a lawyer. The jury should have the power to have somebody ask questions on their behalf or cross-examine. We need to have professional jurors, I think, okay, who are trained in critical thinking, who will not be fooled by legal mumbo-jumbo. And it could be something like the military, where, you know, people go and enlist, go through, maybe before college, they go through a kind of boot camp to learn when something is really proven and when it is not. And then those people serve, you know, maybe 2 years as a juror, professional juror, getting randomly assigned here and there. We've got the technology to make sure that nobody bribes them with anything. It could be a military type of thing, you know, a professional jury. We also need to have a third legal party in the courtroom, like I mentioned. You know, right now you got plaintiff and defendant. Nobody speaks for the rational center except the judge, and that's not enough. Wrong answer. We need a bunch of people with real power in the center to hold the biases of either polarized side in complete check. A state lawyer needs to be assigned who represents nothing but the truth. Maybe he's got the power to investigate and cross-examine. We could call him the adjudicate. And another lawyer, we'll give him to the jury. Okay, we'll speak on their behalf if they've got maybe even the power to ask questions. If the jury is closed off, maybe by a glass partition, the jury can talk with their lawyer without interrupting or having problems in the courtroom or anything like that. Maybe 12's too many. I'd make it 9 or even 6. Those are things that I kind of, you know, think we could do to reform the system. We could call the jury's lawyer the evaluate. How about that? With reforms like that in place, then yes, I'd be a little more comfortable with giving courts the power to execute people. Anyway, that's my idea on the matter. Anybody want to comment on that, be my guest. If you have a question you'd like to ask me, go ahead and write me. It doesn't have to be about atheism. Ask me about sports. Ask me about science. Ask me about science fiction. Ask me about Christian theology. Ask me anything. You can email me at carlsaganjr@aol.com. Put Ask an Atheist in the subject line. You can also reach me on Twitter. My Twitter name is @SaganJr. Or you can simply find me on Facebook under my plain old name of Eric Hildeman. It's time for an episode of The Stupid Files. Dum 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 dum. The Stupid Files, the continuing story of intrepid investigator Thomas Munday, who finds examples of such stupidity, it's criminal. If only being this big a moron were somehow against the law. Dum 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 dum. Dum, dum, dum. Oops. This week, Detective Munday is in the state of Tennessee, where stupidity is once again wreaking havoc with people's lives. A particularly egregious act of stupidity happened recently in Congress, where 242 House members voted to ban all abortions after 20 weeks of a woman's pregnancy. But this lowbrow travesty isn't the stupidity Detective Munday has been investigating. Rather, the stupidity comes in the volunteer state's congressman who represents most of the region between Chattanooga and Nashville. Representative Scott Desjarlais is one of those who voted in favor of the 20-week abortion ban, but records clearly show that in the past, his ex-wife and one of his mistresses both had abortions at his behest. Dum, 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 dum. Scott Desjarlais was a physician before going into politics and had his past support of abortion revealed in court transcripts pertaining to his divorce. In those court transcripts, it was revealed that prior to their marriage, Desjarlais had pressured his soon-to-be wife into having an abortion on multiple occasions. It was also revealed that the good doctor had multiple affairs with patients and pressured one of them to have an abortion when she told him she'd become pregnant. But these dalliances did not keep him from running on a faith and values platform on the Republican ticket in 2010. Dum, 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 dum. But the stupidity does not end there, for while Desjarlais was revealed to be a hypocrite, the voters of the 4th Congressional District of Tennessee apparently were even dumber still. When his past affairs and pro-choice activities had been brought to light, Desjarlais faced a primary challenge in the form of State Senator Jim Tracy. But Tennesseans apparently are a forgiving people, because Scott Desjarlais won the primary with a margin of only 38 votes. He went on to defeat his Democratic opponent, Linda Sherrill, by a clear margin of 58% to 35%. Apparently, this gerrymandered district, not unlike many others, prefers a dirty conservative to a clean liberal. Dum, 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 dum. Desjarlais has not revealed to reporters whether his former wife's abortions or those of his mistresses were performed after 20 weeks of gestation. But one thing has been revealed, and revealed clearly. Nothing is as stupid as gerrymandering a district so that even a quack and proven fraud like Desjarlais can somehow get re-elected so easily. And that concludes this week's Stupid Files. Dum, 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 dum. All right. Well, now it's time for another reading from the Holy Babel. Joshua and the Fall of Jericho. After the eventual death of Moses, the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people, get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give to them, the Israelites. I will commission you and your people to commit ruthless acts of genocide so that you may displace the indigenous people in that area. They are under the delusion that the land belongs to them simply because they've been living there for countless generations." "Sounds like fun," Joshua replied. So he led the Israelites on campaigns of military slaughter throughout the land. They took various cities and towns, and the Lord was with them, endorsing their slaughter along the way. Once, he was getting such a kick out of the violence that he stopped the sun and moon in the midday sky just so that the Israelites could witness as much bloodshed as possible. And if you believe that one. But eventually they came to the city of Jericho, a city which needed to be taken if they were to take the whole of the land. It was simply in too good a strategic location, but the thickness of the walls was so great that chariots rode on top of it, making it seem impregnable. Joshua sent spies into the city to scope out any possible exploitable weaknesses, but the presence of the spies was discovered as they visited a prostitute named Rahab. The king of Jericho sent soldiers to retrieve the spies from Rahab, but she hid them.
"Yep, they were here all right," she said. "But they left not long ago. If you hurry, you might catch them."
So the soldiers left to go off on their wild goose chase, and Rahab let the spies down from their hiding place on top of the roof.
"I believe you'll successfully take the city. Lots of locals have heard you, Hebrews, and what you've been doing, who had several victories already and stuff like that. So I'll help you escape, but promise me that you'll spare me and my household when you do."
"Our lives for your lives," they replied. "Fair deal. Hang a bright red cord from your window and door, and we'll know where you are. Keep all your family inside, and our soldiers will pass your entrance by so that your lives will be spared." Then Rahab let the Hebrew spies down the wall via a rope, since her apartment was part of the city's wall.
"Remember your promise," she said.
"We will," said the spies, and they went off to report what they'd seen in the city to their commander Joshua, including the promise they'd made to Rahab.
"And just what were you two doing with a prostitute in there?"
They stammered. "Oh, never mind. You made a promise, so we'll save her house." And then he went off to take a stroll to think up some battle strategy to take the city. They were camped near the city, so he was able to go near enough to look at it. Suddenly, there appeared a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword.
"Are you for us or for our enemies?" Joshua asked him.
"Neither," he replied, "but as the commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." Joshua fell prostrate in front of him. Then, realizing something, he got back up.
"Wait a minute," he exclaimed. "I thought I was the commander of the army of the Lord."
"You aren't the only culture with monotheism, you know," the stranger told him.
"Ah, I see. Well, in that case, what message does the Lord have for his servant?"
"Basically, that Jericho is about to be given to you as a gift. We can bring the city's walls down for you."
"In exchange for what?"
"A peace treaty."
"And just whom are you representing?"
"The Gibeonites."
Joshua hesitated. "The Gibeonites? Aren't you one of the people our God commanded us to wipe out?"
"That may be, I don't know, but you won't even be able to get to us if you can't take Jericho first."
Josh mulled that over. The stranger had a point.
"Okay, let's say we make a peace treaty with you in exchange for Jericho. Why would you do this for us?"
"The king of Jericho has been oppressing us for years. It's time for payback."
"If you can bring down the walls, why don't you just give the payback yourself?"
"There aren't enough of us. We need a larger army, more your size."
"But what'll I tell my people when they find out that we've got a peace treaty in violation of our religious laws? They won't take kindly to that."
"Just tell them that you were tricked," the stranger suggested. "Make up some story about how representatives from our people came to you in pauper's clothes, claiming to be from a more distant land, and forged a peace treaty under false pretenses."
"That's ridiculous," said Joshua. "There's no way my people would be so gullible as to believe such a trick could ever be legally binding."
"On the contrary, they might be exactly that gullible. Most commoners are, especially if you say that there was an oath you made to the Lord involved. But like I said, there aren't many of us. We can help your community by being woodcutters and water carriers. We're quite good at that."
Joshua thought about that for a moment, then said, "All right, you've got a deal.
What do we need to do to bring the walls down?
A simple thing, really. A march in a parade all the way around the city once each day for 6 days. Have your priests blow trumpets, too. Then on the 7th day, march around 7 times, then have the priests blow a long blast on their horns, at which point the people should give a long, loud shout and the walls will collapse.
Joshua just stared at him.
Let me get this straight. You want us to march around the city in circles, and this will help make the walls collapse?
Basically, yeah, the stranger told him.
Okay, I'll give my people the battle plan, but I really don't think they're going to buy it.
Joshua relayed these plans to the people of Israel, who listened attentively, and afterward, when Joshua finished outlining all the details, they burst out laughing so hard they nearly wet their tunics. Humiliated, Josh went back out for a walk and ran into the stranger again.
They didn't go for it, he told him.
Okay, in that case, bring your military captains together and I'll give you the inside scoop. So Joshua brought all the senior officers into his tent, and the Gibeonite ambassador explained about the plan.
Basically, it works like this, he began. My people are good woodcutters, like I said. We've been hewing timber for months in anticipation of this sort of attack opportunity. The timber is holding up a network of tunnels we've been digging beneath Jericho's city walls. We've done much of the work, but we need a good distraction to finish the rest, and that's where you come in.
By marching around the city in circles and making noise, exclaimed Joshua.
Exactly, said the Gibeonite. So long as the city's watchmen are paying attention to you, they're less likely to notice us going in and out of the nearby tunnel entrances or hear us digging beneath them.
Sounds good, said one of the captains. What happens on the 7th day?
Ah, on that day, you need to be extra distracting because we'll be laying down kindle and oil inside the entire network. On the final lap, we'll light the tunnels on fire, and when your priests see smoke, have them give a long trumpet blast and direct your people to yell. The timbers will burn through, and when they do, the tunnels will collapse, the foundations will give way, the walls will come tumbling down. All you need to do after that is climb over the rubble and seize the city.
All right, said Joshua. I approve. I'll relay this to my people.
No way, the Gibeonite objected. This is a top-secret operation. If we fail, my people will be wiped out, if not by you, but then by the Jerichites. I've taken a big enough risk just telling your captains. Tell your Israelites that this is a test of faith sent by your God. Then when the walls collapse, they'll regard it as one of the greatest miracles of all time and do absolutely anything you say from then on.
Hadn't thought of it that way, said Joshua.
All right, we'll keep it hush-hush. No one leaks the Gibeonites' plan. And all the captains consented. The Israelites, however, weren't as cooperative.
This is still a silly idea, Josh. So you say it's a test of faith, fine, but if God doesn't knock down those walls for us after we've made our fools of ourselves for 7 days, it'll be your ass.
So the Israelites did their marching around the city, parading and blowing their trumpets, and on the 7th day the smoke went up, and Joshua ordered the priests to blow one long blast and the people to shout. And the walls collapsed.
Holy shit, exclaimed the Israelites. It actually worked! How mighty is the Lord our God!
All right, boys, called out Joshua. Get in there and wipe everything out. Slaughter everyone, including the young, just like our compassionate God commanded us. Except for that whore, Rahab, and her family. Now go! So the Israelites massacred everything in sight. Unfortunately, Rahab and her family were already dead. Her house had been part of the wall. And that concludes this reading of the Holy Babel.
All right, well, we're going to the fish barrel here, and I'm going to take a different approach, because in the past what we've done with the fish barrel is, you know, kind of do our little sound clips and then do our stories. But this time I'm just going to, like, you know, crack the stories right on out there and just keep right on going. We're going to, like, you know, change it up here a little bit. So let's do it this way. All right. Well, vaccine exemptions in California have now been overwhelmingly approved. The California State Senate overwhelmingly passed SB 277, abolishing most opt-outs. It was a controversial bill that abolishes personal belief exemptions for vaccines, for vaccines in general, actually. Okay, it got overwhelming approval in the California State Senate. That was on Thursday. So the measure, by Democratic Senators Richard Pan of Sacramento and Ben Allen of Santa Monica, was introduced after an outbreak of measles in December at Disneyland, which sickened 136 Californians. and that prompted everything to go into motion regarding that. What can I say? I mean, it's about doggone time somebody's seeing some common sense on that one. Hey, the Light Sail Project is underway. The Planetary Society is working to launch the first ever solar sail spacecraft, basically, by 2016. Bill Nye, the science guy, who also happens to be CEO of the Planetary Society, is making a big push to get this project launched. The Planetary Society has attempted launches like this before to put a light sail out into orbit, but they ended tragically because not every launch into space is successful, and a partnership that happened previously with the Russian Space Agency to launch a solar sail on board a converted ICBM missile, which was launched from a submarine, that ended up failing. The rocket failed to achieve orbit. So now they're trying it again, but this time with the help of SpaceX and a smaller, lighter, and more technologically advanced payload. The really kick-ass part about this is that they're actually, you know, doing this on a shoestring budget, more or less. But they're raising funds, and they're doing this on Kickstarter.com. So you can reach that site by going to the Planetary Society's website at planetary.org. So this is a really cool thing. I'm actually going to chip in a few bucks for that. This courtesy of Slate Magazine, here are 7 facts that sound fake but are actually true. Yes, Bangladesh, little bitty Bangladesh, has a higher population than Russia. Yes, Bangladesh has 156.6 million people, while Russia has only 143.5 million people. Wow, think of that. See, it's not all down to landmass. In 1958, an Air Force jet collided with a B-57 bomber, which caused the frightened bomber pilot to accidentally drop his payload. I drop my payload when I'm scared sometimes, too. The payload, interestingly enough, was a hydrogen bomb. And it landed somewhere off the Georgia coast. It didn't detonate, of course, but get this. It's never been found. Well, chronologically speaking, Cleopatra lived closer to the time of the opening of the first Pizza Hut than to the building of the last pyramid in Egypt. Yes, the last pyramid was built around 2490 BCE, and the first ever Pizza Hut opened in 1958. Cleopatra lived from 69 to 30 BCE, so she was closer to the hut than to the pyramid pharaohs by almost 1,000 years. Finland and North Korea. Almost on opposite ends of a whole continental spectrum there, okay? But they're only separated by one country. Yeah, that's right, Russia again. Most of North Korea borders China, but a little bit of it on the, like, northeastern corner portion does border Russia. So, North Korea and Finland? You know, there's only one country in the way in between the two. Figure that. My cat, Shadow, wants to jump up on my lap here and contribute to the conversation. We'll let you up here in a minute, Shadow. All right. Bayer, you know, the aspirin company, commercialized heroin as a cough, cold, and pain remedy in the 1890s. Figure that. It wasn't banned by the FDA, heroin wasn't, until 1924. Get this. Alaska? It's not only the most northern state, but it's also the most eastern and western state in the U.S. as well. Yeah, you might think Maine is furthest to the east and Hawaii furthest to the west, but not so. Alaska has the Aleutian Islands, which extend out of the mainland, cross the international date line, and continue on nearly to the coast of Russia. So it's further west than Hawaii, and much, much further east than Maine. Figure that. Oh, there's a tree in India with a canopy larger than your average Walmart. Yes, the Great Banyan Tree. It's 156,000 square feet, while the average Walmart is 105,000 square feet. They basically prop the canopy up with sticks so that people can walk under it. It's a nice sight in India, actually. Here's a totally different news story. The U.S. now has a new youngest ever chess master. Yes, we all remember the story of Bobby Fischer. Well, Carissa Yip has just become the new youngest ever chess master. She's only 11.
figure that. Well, it's about that time. Yes, time to bring the grinding gears of the Sacred Cow Verst House to a grinding halt. I promise that I'll always do my very best to make sure that here you'll get the best possible brain food for your precious time. There we go. Next time, we'll discuss... What will we discuss next time? We'll discuss how to make s'mores. Pornographic style. Make sure to also listen to the other podcasts affiliated with the Freethought Alliance of Milwaukee, the Mythicist Milwaukee Show, and the Craftcast, part of your complete secular Sunday breakfast at night. And don't forget that the Sacred Cow Verst House also exists as a blog. You can read original material and various segments heard on this show at sacredcowversthouse.blogspot.com. Opening music theme is by Universal Dice. Check them out at universaldice.com. And the closing atheistic music sampler, which you'll hear in a moment, I think we're going to go back to George Robb and do Think for Yourself here on that. Until next time, this is Eric J. Hilderman reminding you that... let's see. What am I reminding you of? I forgot what I'm reminding you of. I guess I'm the one who needs a reminder. Good luck. Thank you. And may Shu, the god of wind and sky, go with you. So long, everybody.
Say